You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm learning more and more every day about this new president of ours, Barack Obama. And I got to say, his new strategy, one never tried before in the Bush administration, I don't know whether it's going to succeed or fail. But it's a very interesting strategy. Barack Obama has decided to try to placate his adversaries. And when I say adversaries, I mean everyone from domestic adversaries like the Christian right and the Republican Party to foreign adversaries, people like Iran and Al-Qaeda. He's trying to do it through respect. And it's a fascinating thing that he's doing. It's the key to Obama diplomacy. And he doesn't appear to be giving in anything that matters. I'm watching him on that, as I'm sure you are. But at the same time, he's reaching out to people that oppose him. It seems like a great strategy, though I got to tell you, I'm not so sure it's working. The Republicans smile nicely and then vote against his stimulus package. He gets Rick Warren to say some things that are not as condemnatory as things in the past, but do evangelicals really fall for Obama? I don't know. The most dramatic thing, of course, that he's done is giving his first interview since becoming president of the United States to the Al Arabiya television station. Reaching out over the heads of Al-Qaeda, over the heads of Iran, over the heads of Hamas, to Arabs and Muslims across the globe. To those that aren't as radical as America's three enemies. It's a fascinating strategy, and I have to think he's doing the same on all fronts. He's doing it with Republicans. He's doing it with the Christian right. He's saying, look, the real radicals, the ones that will never compromise, you know, I'll be nice to you. But the people he's really reaching out to, I think, are the moderates in all those groups. It's a fascinating strategy. Again, I don't know if it's working, but this hour I want to take apart, piece by piece, each element of the strategy. I want you to see that they're all related. That the way he deals with the Arab and the Muslim world, the way he deals with the Republican world, the way he deals with the evangelical world, actually have a lot in common. Reaching out to the people of goodwill in all those communities, and yes, it may surprise you that there are people of goodwill in all those communities. Yes, even Republicans, I think, a few. And at the same time, I think, not necessarily compromising with the more extremist in all those communities. And yes, of course, they're extremists in all those communities. It's a fascinating strategy, and, you know, it might work, it might not. I don't know how to feel about it. I like it. I like that he's trying, but it worries me. It worries me that in the process of reaching out, he might actually compromise. Now, so far, I don't think he's done that. I don't think he's compromised in anything important. But symbols matter, and he is giving out symbolic messages. Very strong, powerful, symbolic messages. I mean, the first one, of course, was to Rick Warren. Now, this is something that I and many others complained about. After all, Rick Warren compared gay people, and particularly gay couples, to such things as pedophilia and incest. He reached out to Rick Warren. He gave Rick Warren the invocation at his inaugural. Now, I thought that was a mistake. I guess I still do. But I'm not as sure anymore. I see an overall pattern. I guess it depends on how Christian evangelicals take the hand that's been offered them. Will they smile, shake it, and continue to stab gay people in the back? Probably. Probably. The leaders certainly will. But maybe the moderates in those communities, and yes, there are some moderates in those communities, will tone down their rhetoric just a bit. At least examine the idea that there's another side. At least it was just a symbol. Barack Obama, as far as I know, will still go forward with ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, with bringing in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, making that law, making sure that gay people can't be fired just for being gay, with getting rid of stronger hate crimes laws, and even, and I hope to help work on this, creating federal civil unions, giving equal rights to gay couples across America, at least at the federal level, without using the capital M marriage word. And it does seem that Rick Warren, at least in public, is moderating his rhetoric a bit. Certainly at the invocation, he moderated his rhetoric, and he apologized, indeed, for comparing gay people to pedophilia and so forth. What will be the result? I don't know. But then I look and I see what Barack Obama is doing with Republicans. Today he spent all day on Capitol Hill trying to sell Republicans on his stimulus package. And all the Republicans agreed he was very nice, he was very cordial, he was very warm. And then they went out to the cameras and said they're not going to vote for it. Will this work? Well, we'll find out today whether Republicans were persuaded by him. But I suggest that maybe he wasn't just reaching out to those Republicans. Maybe he was reaching out beyond them, over their heads. To some of them, certainly, sure, he wants their votes. But I think he's also letting them know that, you know, if you don't agree with me, the American people will see that I am at least reaching out to you. One of the things that always struck me about Barack Obama, and I said this back in the primary, I said this back before I endorsed him last January, back in the fall of 2007. I questioned who Barack Obama was. How can you be a liberal, a progressive, someone who cares about the causes that I and you believe in, and at the same time reach out to people who spit on those causes? I understand the good faith gestures. I understand wanting to listen. Heck, I myself, as everyone knows here, bring a Republican, Mike Lane, to my show every couple weeks. And even though I strongly disagree with him, I give him his say, and then I tell him why I think he's wrong. But I do so in amity. I do so in friendship. I do so in recognizing that even though he and I strongly disagree with each other on a number of topics, I don't think he's out to destroy America. I think he's out to do what he thinks is best, things that I think are wrong. I think that's what Barack Obama is doing. And when he reached out to the Republicans in the surplus package, it was fascinating. There was even, for example, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland, Republican of Maryland. And this, to me, is just so fascinating, just to give you an idea of the Republican mind. He's 82 years old, and he told Obama, I remember when Franklin Roosevelt beat Hoover. Don't you think we should not solve our personal and local problems by burdening future generations of Americans? And the whole Republican room applauded. In the Republican mind, Hoover's still right. Roosevelt is still wrong. It is wrong, the Republicans will tell you, to pull us out of a Great Depression, because that can lead to debt. It's fine to go into debt for war. It's fine to go into debt to give money to big corporations. It's fine to go into debt to give tax breaks to oil companies and the rich. But trying to help people who are put out of work, people who in the Great Depression were starving on street corners, 25% unemployment, well, that's just a waste of money. And yet Obama reached out to this old fella as well. I don't just say old because he was 82, but because I think his ideas are very old. Who supports Herbert Hoover these days? The Republican Party. So the Republicans nodded, and they smiled, and they said they're going to vote against his package. And I suspect that most of them will vote against his package. But Obama made some compromises. Now, I think they were small. I think they were symbolic. It scares me a little that he made these compromises, but they were tiny. Republicans made a huge fuss over 0.3% of the budget, of the bill. The bill is $800-something billion, and in there was a $335 million to help people get contraception. Now, that's not 1% of the package. That's not 1,000th of the package. That is a third of 1,000th of the package. And Republicans claim to want to stop abortions. We all know the truth. They just don't want people having sex. But they claim to want to stop abortions. You don't know the best way to stop abortions? As I told Mike Lane, it's contraception. I know the Catholic Church doesn't believe in it. I know the evangelicals don't believe in it. But you want to stop abortions? You think abortion is evil and murder? Contraception does it. It's a tiny thing. Republicans argued it wouldn't stimulate the economy. Obama took it out. He took it out because he realized that Republicans were using a tiny, tiny hair of a tail to wag a very big dog. But one thing he wouldn't take out, the heart of the thing that the Republicans complained most about, were, interestingly, tax cuts. See, Republicans love tax cuts if you're a multimillionaire. They do. But Obama was giving tax cuts not just to people who pay income tax, but also people who pay payroll taxes, ordinary workers who pay, let's face it, a greater percentage of their income in payroll taxes than the super rich, right? I mean, if you earn under $84,000 or so, you pay 7.5% of your income in FICA. We working people know that, right? Social Security, Medicare. But if you earn $1 million, well, it's capped. You might pay 1% of your income or less, 0.1%. FICA payroll taxes are regressive. The poor pay a greater percentage than the rich. So when Obama wanted to give a tax cut for those people, the Republicans got very upset. Very upset. And they said it was a form of welfare. Obama didn't give in on that point. Of course, that was a huge point. That's $275 billion. That's a quarter of his whole plan. And he said, this is a quote from Obama, feel free to whack me over the head because I probably will not compromise on that part. I'll watch you on Fox News and feel bad about myself, quote unquote. That got a good laugh. He also deleted $200 million for improvements on the mall. And I was just on the National Mall. It's a very necessary part of America. It is America's front street. It's the place where all the protests occur, from everything on the March on Washington to the great celebration of Obama's own inaugural. He got rid of that too. Again, a tiny thing. So he's giving tiny compromises to the Republicans. But it doesn't appear to give any major ones. And the Republicans, in turn, are smiling nicely and then voting against his package. Interesting. The same is probably true with the evangelicals, right? Obama will give them small symbolic things. He won't give them anything major. And they'll smile and be nice back and then continue to talk against him. Interestingly, the same thing is going on in the Arab world. Obama is not negotiating with Al-Qaeda, nor should he. In fact, he's making Al-Qaeda very nervous. Al-Qaeda is calling him all kinds of negative racial terms, including but not limited to an Uncle Tom. They're nervous, and they're nervous because Barack Obama is appealing to moderates. He's going over their heads. In a stunning move, and I think it truly was stunning, the first interview that he gave was to an Arab news station, one based in Saudi Arabia, Al Arabiya. And in that, if you watch carefully, and this is very well worth watching, you've got to watch the entire 15 or so minute interview. Obama must repeat the word respect 5-6 times. How he wants to treat the Muslim world with respect. He wants to treat the Arab world with respect. He reminds the audience, and this is stunning, particularly given the campaign, that he has Islamic members of his own family. That is stunning. Remember, for all the accusations that Obama was a Muslim in the campaign, of course that's false. And you didn't see his Muslim family members very much during the campaign. I mean, even the right wing tried to bring them out, and he kept them hidden. He kept them quiet. He even, you may remember, removed a couple of Arab women from his own rally from being in front of the cameras. He later apologized for that. I don't know that Obama did that personally. His people did that. Let's get Obama's background perfectly clear, just so everyone knows what it is. It's very interesting, actually. His grandfather was a Christian, and one of his wives, I think it was his second wife, was a Muslim, and his grandfather then converted to Islam. That's where the name Hussein comes from. His grandfather had a son, Obama's father, the one he doesn't know very well, let's face it, right? I mean, the father that from Kenya who he met for a month when he was 10, and that's pretty much the only true time Obama spent with him. But this father grew up as a Muslim. Obama's father grew up as a Muslim, but by the time he was 18, according to Obama's own writings, his father was a self-declared atheist. His mother was an atheist, too. Grew up in a Christian family, but an atheist, too. And, of course, Obama grew up in this really atheist household. They don't talk about that much either, but found Christianity with the help of Reverend Wright or with the help of the political skills. The point is that Obama has always been reaching out to people of all kinds. I mean, to atheists, to Christians, to Muslims, to Arabs, to Jews, to blacks, to whites, Latinos, Asians, of course, gay people, straight people, evangelicals, intolerant, even to our enemies. And the question is whether it works. And the answer is, I don't know. We're going to see. We're going to see if it works. What he's doing is he's going over the heads of the awful people that are bent on war, over the heads of the terrorists, over the heads of Hamas, and reaching out to the people who want peace. He's going over the head of Ahmadinejad and reaching out to the Iranians who want peace, talking about the proud Persian culture. Does this work? Does this work at all? Well, Al-Qaeda appears to be afraid. As I said, they're calling him names. they may find they have less recruits because Obama is noticeably getting some excitement in the Arab and Muslim world. He's reaching out to Saudi Arabia, talking about the Saudi peace plan, which is already some 6 years old. Not that he agrees with everything in it. He doesn't. He said that. But as a start, as a brave start. And Ahmadinejad, he has said, not that he'll meet with him, but that he'll meet with Iran. And Ahmadinejad responded with a slap, demanding today in the United Nations that the United States apologize for all its crimes and basically withdraw militarily from the Middle East. Hamas responded with a slap, ending the shaky 22-day ceasefire. And even though Israel was bringing in 185 truckloads of humanitarian aid every single day and offered a permanent truce, a permanent ceasefire, a permanent opening of trade, which, of course, Israel doesn't have to do. No nation has to trade with any nation. We don't even trade with Cuba. And Cuba isn't out to annihilate the United States. And all Hamas had to do was return the soldier they kidnapped, an Israeli soldier. And Hamas's response? Bombs. They broke the ceasefire. They set a bomb which killed an Israeli soldier and tore the legs off of another. And here's the interesting thing that hasn't been reported that often in the press. The Israeli soldier that they murdered was an Arab. An Arab Bedouin who served in the Israeli military was killed. Well, that Arab won't get a lot of sympathy. Not from Hamas. And now Israel will have to respond. And humanitarian aid won't come. And virtually no one will blame Hamas. That's the way it goes. But here it is. Obama is reaching out to the moderate people. And the radicals are all, I don't know, whether it's the evangelicals, whether it's the Republicans, whether it's Ahmadinejad, whether it's Hamas, whether it's Al-Qaeda. All of them are, I think, a little bit nervous. The most radical, the most extreme, the most bent on war, they won't shake the hand in friendship. They're bent on war. They're bent on destruction. They're bent on tearing everything up. But what I think Obama realizes is that not everybody fits that. That the majority of Arabs and Muslims in the world don't want war with the United States, don't want war with Israel. The majority simply want, as Obama put it so nicely in that Al Arabiya interview, to raise their children, to have a decent life, to make things better for their families. There are people out there, the majority of people out there, I'd venture to say the great majority in the Muslim world and the majority in the Arab world, who recognize that war doesn't help anyone. As Obama said, you will be judged by what you build, not by what you destroy. As he said to Iran, if you will unclench your fist, I will shake your hand. Now, do I think Ahmadinejad listens to this? Do I think Hamas listens to this? Do I think Al-Qaeda listens to this? Not on your life. All three of those groups derive their power entirely by mistreating their own people and by causing war. And by causing war against others purposely to get their people to support them, right? When Iranians look at Ahmadinejad's rule, they see someone who's ruled terribly. There's very high unemployment. Iran's standard of living is going way, way down. But he retains power by building tunnels for Hamas, giving them the best weapons to hit Tel Aviv. Hamas has done terrible by Gaza standards. Gaza is in ruins. In 2005, when Israel left, Gaza had a seaport, an airport, the greenhouses that Israel left behind for them. They had complete trade, complete open borders. Hamas has ruined all that. Al-Qaeda has ruined the life for Afghanistan and for Pakistan. The people under the Taliban lived horribly. Horribly. But Obama isn't speaking to Al-Qaeda, Hamas, or Ahmadinejad. He's speaking to the people who want a better life. He's speaking to Arabs and Muslims and Persians. He's speaking to evangelical Christians. He's speaking to Republicans. He's speaking underneath the leaders. He's doing what Ronald Reagan used to do, speak over the heads of the leaders directly to the people. It's a great strategy. And I got to say, I hope it works. Kevin from Brooklyn, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I just think this is a fascinating strategy. I don't know whether it's going to work or not, but
I believe it is, because bottom line is that at the end of the day, people want to raise their children and live. War is a very unnatural state for people.
And yet, throughout history, Kevin, dictators, and Hitler, Stalin, you name them, every dictator has used war as a way to rally their own people to act against their own interests, to convince them that hating some other foreign person is better than working to build their country. That's how dictators stay in power. That's how they talk about external enemies.
Kind of second term. But,
well, exactly. That's exactly right. That's true, too. It's an old trick. Can Obama undo that old trick?
I believe he can. I think he's smart enough actually to pull it off. It's just a matter of having the backing and things of that nature. I've been doing some writing, and I go extensively into the Middle East, and I talk about the three-way relationship that the United States in particular have with the Middle East, where basically we're siding with three different interests, with three different goals and three different outcomes, and it's part of the quagmire. And the one equation that the United States cares about is oil.
That's true.
Okay. And the thing is, during the fall of the Soviet Union, and this is the major problem, this is part of the problem that we have today in the Middle East, okay, is that when the Soviet Union fell as a result of the invasion of Afghanistan, the United States thought, and they could be the single power in the Middle East. And the reality was, no. Because everybody, Saddam Hussein, Israel, Iran, Iraq, whatever, they're all scrambling to become power. The power in the Middle East.
Of course they are. That's true with China and Korea and India and Pakistan and the nations of Africa and South America. I mean, everywhere around the globe, you're going to have regional powers. That's we're the only superpower, I guess, left. People are always going to be scrambling for power. What's fascinating for me is this. To me, I see almost a classic battle. I mean, the kind of thing that could be in some – I mean, you could put it in a comic book. You could put it in a novel. You could put it in a video game or just some great epic between leaders all across the globe who are trying to persuade their people that war against an enemy – real or imagined, and often there's real grievances here, is better than building up your own people. And what's fascinating to me, I mean, Ahmadinejad was fascinating to me. Here in the United States went way beyond the call. I mean, Bush wouldn't talk to Iran. The Europeans believe in sanctioning Iran. And Ahmadinejad said, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to pursue a nuclear weapon, and you have to apologize before we even sit down at the same table together. So he's throwing down the gauntlet. And the question is to me whether Obama can reach around Ahmadinejad, over his head, under him, to the mullahs or even to the people of Iran to push this terrible person on the sidelines and actually deal with the real needs of the Iranian people. And I don't know if he can do it or not, but I'm watching on the edge of my seat to see if he can.
Well, I just think what's going to happen is well, this is where the waiting game comes in diplomacy. And once, I can't pronounce his name very well.
Ahmadinejad.
Yeah. I think once he realizes he's barking into the wind, that's when Obama will come back and say, well, his offer still stands.
Maybe, but there's also a fear, it's a real fear, and that's why I think it's fascinating to watch this, but I'm nervous about it. There's a fear sometimes when you reach your hand out to an opponent that it's seen as weakness. When you're nice to someone who's not nice to you, there's two possible reactions. One is that they realize that they're not being nice and they come around and be nice to you. That would be wonderful if that's always the case. The other reaction is And this is a typical sociopathic reaction. And let's face it, the leaders of Hamas, Iran, and Al-Qaeda are certainly sociopaths in many different ways, is to say, aha, you're reaching your hand out to me, therefore you're weak. Therefore, I can slap it and get more. Iran will pursue its nuclear program. Al-Qaeda says, aha, he's weak. We can do more suicide bombings. Hamas broke the ceasefire just the other day that would be wonderful for the people of Gaza, but they don't want good things for their own people. So will Obama have to give up the niceness and be tough, or will he be able to reach around these leaders? I don't know. Hey, look at the Republicans. Well, I mean, just a domestic example. The Republicans are smiling and being nice and patting him on the back, but they're all voting against the stimulus package. The Christian evangelicals are smiling and being nice, but continuing, you know, their horrific anti-gay rhetoric. So it's not really an attack on Obama. I don't know if any man can achieve what he's trying to achieve, but I think it's fascinating that he's trying.
Well, I think it's a good way to be. But what I wanted to point out is that you have to understand, especially within the Middle Eastern culture, you're looking at a region of the world which, until 70 years ago when oil was discovered there, had nothing.
There's just a tribal culture of Bedouins, and absolutely, that's true. I mean, well, they did before. I mean, it should be pointed out, in the Middle Ages, the Arab and Muslim world was far more advanced Christian world. Absolutely,
yes.
A far more advanced civilization. But you're right, by the 1800s, early 1900s, there was not much there.
Okay, people were scrambling for drinking water. Okay, there's a scene in the movie Lawrence of Arabia where a guy gets shot for drinking out of the wrong well.
Yeah, well, particularly in Arabia. I mean, it's a big desert. It's have oil.
The only reliable sources of water in the whole region from Morocco to Baghdad is the Nile and the Tigris and Euphrates Valley.
That's true.
And so, you know what? I think what will wipe off a lot of issues on the table, and this is the tech geek coming out of me, is water purification.
But that's not why people are fighting, Kevin. They're not fighting over water. Look, they have more than enough. The Saudis have more than enough money. They can buy, you know, water to feed all their people for the next 3,000 years.
Well,
I mean, that was
technology.
A problem 200 years ago. But it's not a problem today.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing else but oil there, and that's the card they're going to play.
Of course, it's their only card. They're going to play it as much as they can.
Exactly.
What I find interesting, though, is this is the heart of my question, and I don't know whether it's going to work. God knows, I hope it does. Whether Obama's rhetoric, whether him showing them respect, it's like it's the in Asian culture, they call it, you know, a saving face. In the Arabic culture, it's interesting. Some scholars say that the only reason Sadat of Egypt could make peace with Israel in 1978 in Camp David, it could come to Jerusalem, and people forget, you know, Sadat came to Jerusalem before Camp David, before the United States even got involved. Sadat took that extremely dramatic step. Some say he did it because in 73 he, you know, did a surprise attack and, you know, was doing very well in the Yom Kippur War. That it's a way that respect allows people to save face. That's just so important, even though it's symbolic. And that's what's interesting to me, again, and that's why I'm comparing all these things at once, the respect shown to even some intolerant Christian evangelicals in a way, you know, saying, look, I can respect you. I won't agree with you, but I can respect you. And
very few people want to be – okay. Hello?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Very few people want to be looked upon as being a total you-know-what.
Right.
Okay, and that's just a basic human need. You know, if you keep on – you know how much of an idiot you look like every time I extend my hand out to you, you keep on smacking it?
Well, exactly, and that's what's so interesting, because what I think Obama is doing – with this very – I mean, it's a weapon. It's a soft weapon. This diplomacy as a weapon is what I think he's doing is he's driving a wedge between the moderates and the extremists. And I mean this everywhere I'm talking about, whether it's the Republicans, the Christian evangelicals, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Hamas or, you know, whether it's the Palestinians or it's – Iran, what he's doing is he's the extremists, Hamas and Iran and Al-Qaeda will always, I won't say Iran, excuse me, Hamas and Ahmadinejad and Al-Qaeda will always slap his hand. But Palestinians, the Iran and the Afghanis will not. And so what he's doing is he's reaching around their leaders who keep slapping their hand to see if the people actually see that these leaders are not serving the people themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even the Republicans, it's true, right? I mean, 82% of Americans support Barack Obama. If the Republican Party is constantly being obstructionist, they're going to lose more in the next election.
Yeah, well, those guys are highly invested in the status quo.
Sure. But they can't be seen, as you said, as slapping Obama's hand away every single time.
Yeah. And I think it's a very effective weapon on every single front that he's fighting.
What's fascinating to me is I haven't heard, and I don't want to give to myself too much credit here, but I haven't heard anybody tie all these things together on the mainstream media yet. But I see a very strong pattern in everything Obama does. And it's reaching out to his enemies, reaching out to his adversaries, not caving in. Now, if he starts caving in, I'm going to be very critical of Obama very soon. But I don't see him caving in on anything but symbolism. Listen, I was upset with his choice of Rick Warren. But he's caving in on symbolism, but he's not caving in, so far as I can see yet, on the important things. You know, he gives in on the condom thing, but he doesn't give on the very important tax cuts for working people. It'll be interesting because right now, Kevin, and this is a bit of a segue, but I don't know if you know this. The Republicans have been getting money from the companies that have gotten our bailout money. The banks that have gotten the bailout have been spending money on Republicans to get them to oppose the Employee Free Choice Act. These same companies, whether it's Citibank or AIG, that got billions of dollars from American taxpayers, are now not spending that money to screw over American workers. And one of the things I'm going to want to see is Barack Obama's velvet glove, his soft fist. I know he uses diplomacy. I know he reaches out to his adversaries. But I would hope that this thing gets him to break. This is a man I think Obama is extremely slow to anger. But sometimes I guess I want to see a little anger. And I don't know. I'm sort of torn because I understand why his diplomacy is a very powerful weapon. But will he ever, do you think, Kevin, whether it's Al-Qaeda or the companies taking our money and giving them to Republicans to oppose workers' rights, will he ever snap and say, hey, that goes too far? Or is that just on his personality?
So. I don't think so, because look at how he ran his election. They did everything to provoke him.
Yeah, they did. See, I think he's unflappable. He's no drama Obama.
Yeah.
This is a man who... But then my question is, and again, only time will tell, can this succeed? I mean, what do you do with an implacable enemy? What do you do? And I put them all in one category, whether it's domestic, foreign. Obviously, the Republicans don't want to, kill us all. But they are certainly an enemy of the domestic policies that we and Obama support. Al-Qaeda, of course, does want to kill us all.
You discredit them, which...
So you do. Uh-huh. So you kill them with kindness, basically, right?
Yeah.
You kill them with kindness. You say, I would love to get along with these people, but they're implacable and they just look silly.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating strategy.
It's just you have to have the discipline, the staying power to ride that wave out.
It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy.
It's not.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. I appreciate it very much.
Problem. Have a good one.
Sure. And if you want to call in, there's still a little bit of time. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. At the heart of it to me with this fascinating strategy is where Obama compromises. As far as I'm concerned, and maybe I'm going to withdraw a little bit from my attack on the appointing Rick Warren to give the invocation, as much as I didn't like it. I think symbolically he can give. Again, appearing on Al-Arabiya, on meeting with the Republicans, symbolically he can afford to give. But what I don't want to see Obama doing, and I don't think he's doing yet, is giving up on the policies that got him elected. I don't see him yet making compromises that matter, that are severe, that are serious. I see him giving small things, symbolic things. And I'm okay with that. And some of you aren't. I know, you know, some progressives are extremely upset with his meeting with Republicans, with his reaching out to them. Me, I don't know if it'll do any good. I don't know, but I want to see if it will do any good. It's the same thing in our foreign policy. You know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to tell the Arab and Muslim world, we're not your enemies. It doesn't hurt for Obama to point out he has Muslim family members. It's true. It doesn't hurt for him to give an interview from a Muslim capital, to appear in his first interview on Al Arabiya. It can't hurt. It can't hurt unless it's seen as weakness. But in my view, it will only be seen as weakness by the people that we don't want, that we can never have on our side. Al-Qaeda will never, ever, ever be allied with the United States. Hamas will never, ever be allied with the United States. Ahmadinejad will never be allied with the United States. But Afghanis and Arabs and Muslims and Palestinians and Iranians can be. And that's who he's reaching out to. Will it work? I don't know. But it's fascinating to see. As for the Republicans, well, they're not trying to destroy the United States. Some would say they are. They are trying to knock this guy down a peg, and yet they seem to be backing down. Just today, or yesterday, actually, Arlen Specter, the ranking member of the House of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that he wasn't going to oppose Eric Holder. I knew he wouldn't. How can you? Eric Holder will be a terrific attorney general. He's a very well-respected man. And the people that are opposing, when David Vitter votes against Hillary Clinton's nomination, does anybody notice? Does it make Clinton look bad, or does it make Vitter look bad? I got to say, so far, I'm nervous, but so far, so good. Yesterday, the Democrats passed the Lilly Ledbetter Act in the Senate and the House. It's going to come together and bring civil rights for all. You know, of course, what that is. That's the act that says that, yes, if you don't know you're being discriminated against, you can still sue this Lilly Ledbetter who was got unequal pay for equal work. Change is coming. And the strategy of Barack Obama reaching out to his adversaries is a fascinating one. Sometimes it makes me queasy. I have to admit it. Sometimes it makes me a little nervous. I wonder if I'd had the stomach to shake hands with some of the people that Barack Obama is shaking hands with. And yet, if he can reach out to the moderates and divide them from the extremists, there might just be hope. Hope in the United States, hope throughout the world. And isn't hope the reason why we elected this guy? If you have a comment on my show today, post it at RadioInsideScoop.com. Next up, your hillbilly elitist, Bob Kincaid. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.